Chapter 6, Requiescat. Dryden did not go home, despite Rosalind's insistence. Who was she to tell him anything? That cheating little... No, he warned himself. You have to stop accusing her. She made a good point, no matter how much she acted like a little bitch while delivering it. This jealousy was not doing him any good, since she made it clear in the hour since lunch that she would not be taking him back to her apartment, nor would she get into his pickup truck. He escorted her through Red Hook, into antique shops and bookstores. They chatted on a bench facing Main Street for an hour, watched the cars go by. He even dodged traffic to buy a red rose for her from the gas station while she used the bathroom in the White Rabbit. And still, she would not invite him up. You're being ridiculous, he told her as she sniffed the flower and smiled to herself. She looked up at the petals, a small smile still gracing her carmine lips. I'm sorry, I'm being what? I bought you lunch and expensive lattes. I followed you through these stores for hours. I even got you that flower. Her mouth no longer held anything like a smile. Yeah, and?
He glared at her for acting like she was dense, for making him spell it out. And you're still not gonna let me come up to your apartment? Relationships are a two-way street, Rose. You've gotta give a little. You can be one of the most frigid, distant women.
Rosen threw the flower in his face with as much force as she could muster in her fury, but roses are not aerodynamic enough to suit anger. It hit, rebounded, and landed in a storm drain. You're obviously confusing me with a whore, so why don't you take that two-way street home, because I have no interest in seeing you. Then, she referred to him as a part of the excretory system under her breath, but too loudly for him to miss. He watched her run across the street in her black boots, making no effort to chase her. He picked the rose out of the drain and wiped the brown wetness from its petals, holding it limply in one hand. At first he was angry with her, then himself. Finally, he was just angry. He walked to calm himself until he neared the cemetery on the outskirts of Red Hook. He could think of no better place for a vampire with a broken heart, so he hopped the fence. The moon glinted off the headstones, which usually did a passable job of cheering him up. Tonight, it only reminded him of Rosalind, of their tryst there, of the thin scar on his elbows from the gravel on the cemetery paths, of her letting him kiss the blood off the scrapes in her back. It was all so romantic. He sat next to the weeping stone angel, snarling to himself about his mistakes and Rosalind's prominent faults, picking blades of grass and discarding them to the wind. He did not hear the voices of the two, yards away, watching him and sniffling. He was so caught up in cursing an invisible Rosalind and imagining their reunion that he almost missed his death. The man punched Dryden in the temple. Dryden's vision went with the majority of his consciousness, his brain suffering severe damage, in moments from a blow stronger than a sledgehammer. He could hear the wind, though it drifted farther and farther away. He could feel the prickliness of the grass on his neck and an insistent rock pressing into his left kidney. And then he felt the man's teeth on his throat tearing, the warmth of blood gushing. The man pulled back to widen the hole and kill what little of Dryden lingered. Dryden felt fingers intercede. Then Dryden felt nothing more. I like that one. The girl in the light blue sweater and cargo pants growled, don't ruin him. The man came up with a bloody mouth, like a child who had gotten into the Kool-Aid. He did not comprehend her infatuation with cemeteries. They were not places for them anymore. Even the air here was hard to breathe, tinged with the consecration that irritated. Did she fetishize them because she was reborn in one? Are you kidding? He's the prince of the Possum Kingdom. We don't save these. We mock them and we kill them. He looked into her glittering eyes. Is this because of what Sterling said? For her, it was no longer about saving souls, but damning them. Why shouldn't we make vampires out of people who want to be? Do him. His eyes widened. Why don't you, if you like him so much? One, she gloated, because I want to watch you cut yourself and feed him. It would amuse me. And you want to keep me amused, don't you? She punctuated this with an exaggerated stretch in the air to make the sweater even more form-fitting. And another to her toes to do the same with the pants. 2, because I want a minion. 2.5, I'm a wee baby and my blood won't work. 3, because he brought me a rose. 4, because we still have Sterling locked in the basement and I'm sure he'd like a new friend to rant at. And 5, because I'm telling you to, and you'll take my orders like a good little bitch. I don't recall agreeing to that, and your rose smells awful. She dropped the rose to the ground in the dirt. She dropped the rose and ground it into the dirt with the heel of her boot. You agreed to be my bitch when I drank up your girlfriend. She smirked, then leaned in close to his ear. And really, you want to do it, don't you? You want to make me happy, because then I can make you happy. He would not let himself be swayed so easily. Not before she offered up something a little better in trade. Why not turn Sterling into your minion? He begs for it every time you feed on him. Besides, I've never made another vampire. I'm not sure I remember how. Sterling is old and gross, and I don't want to be stuck with him, adoring the hell out of me for the rest of eternity, thanks. Now get feeding on the corpse before it spoils, bitch! He rolled his eyes, and without looking at the ground, slashed open his wrist against a sharp stone. He put it up to Dryden's lips, but she held the horizontal wound until it healed closed. Then she removed a razor from her bracelet, slitting her own skin open in the process and leaving a rivulet of blood, and gouged open his forearm, front wrist to elbow, shoving it at the corpse's face. Now, remember we cut down the road, not across the street. Do it quick. The cemetery is making me break out in hives. She looked down at Dryden's glassy eyes, reflecting the waning moon. See you soon, she sang. Rosalind sat cross-legged before the candle in an otherwise dark room, her face seeming to change in the dancing shadows. From the other room, she could hear the lovebirds resuming their affectionate light chirping, but the feather she held was as black as night. Great fire, my defender and protector, son of the celestial fire, equal of the sun that cleanses the earth of foulness, deliver Dryden from the evil thoughts that torment him night and day. She cast Hugin's feather toward the candle. The tongue of the flame caught and devoured it with purple flame until all that remained was sulphurous ash. The spell was a loose adaptation of an invocation to fire for cure, but Rosalind reckoned that the effect would not be much different. It had done a good job of banishing her cold and the added oomph of a raven feather, particularly one from a bird who was supposedly the former pet of a god, would help it in its repurposing. Really, if a witch could not improvise, what good was she? Evil thoughts and germs couldn't be that much different in the eyes of the divine.
In theory, she had moral qualms with doing any spell that might be construed as interfering with the free will of another sentient being. Shane had been right to chide her. She had made exceptions to this rule, more of a guideline. But only when she could, without a doubt, justify it was in the best interest of the person involved.
Since Dryden would otherwise lose her if his threatened masculinity worsened, and since she knew this was not anything he could want, despite behavior to the contrary, it should not reflect negatively upon her karma. It was more like a good deed. It wasn't as though she was forcing him to love her. Love spells were forbidden most of the time. Probably. This was more of a prayer than a spell. And when looked at in that light, she was merely suggesting to the fire that it scourged Dryden's mind of thoughts that did him no good. Who wouldn't want that? She blew out the candle after a session of meditation her friend Arden had recorded for her, though she could not relax, and every animal guide she kept in the menagerie of her head seemed slightly rabid. At first she blamed this on Dryden for upsetting her so much, for distracting her from the eternal divine that should be the primary focus of her mind. But her intuition told her that something was wrong somewhere close to her. She tiptoed through the apartment, noticing Hugin watching her from his perch in the kitchen. He clicked his beak at her as though threatening to bite her, something he had never done. "Shh," she told him. "I just want to check on Shane." She prodded Shane's bedroom door open. While a lesser person might have confused the sounds within for someone in mild distress, having a nightmare, maybe. Rosalind had made those same gasps too often to mistake them for anything but increasing circles of pleasure. So, for once, Shane was more than fine. Rosalind rang her parents' house, and after three rings, her mother answered. She contrived a reason for her call, something concerning jitters about the first day of classes, but hung up before it could turn into a fight about Rosalind's irresponsibility. It was a relief, but only for a few moments. This left only one other option. She dialed Dryden's cell phone, though she knew that he would not be anticipating a call from her. Her wrath tended to last a few days, during which she refused any contact with him. "Come on, answer, answer!" She repeated this three times until someone did answer, but it was not her boyfriend. "Where is he?" she demanded. "Who exactly?" asked the man on the other end of the line. "There's a lot of people here, and not all of them are identified. A name would help." "Dryden, where is he?"
"Ah, his name is Dryden. He is inconvenienced. Could I take a message?" "Who the hell is this?" Who the hell is this? He repeated back. Is there a callback number at which he could reach you, Miss The Hell Is This? That's a Chinese name, right? Give him the phone! He's in no position to be taking calls, but I will see that he finds you once he is in a more social mood. And the man hung up with no further conversation. When she tried the phone again, it went straight to voicemail. She did not know the phone's true fate, because there is no dial tone for, "We're sorry, the phone you've been calling has been crushed against a stone angel. Please try your call again, to another number, that is not now a mess of plastic and wires."